from Delmonico Farm in New York, here's Max Tucci. Welcome to his table.
Hi, welcome back to another episode of Welcome to My Table with Max Tucci. I am your host, Max Tucci, and welcome back really to my table. We've had some fun episodes and we're not stopping now. We're like in the full swing of things. Suzanne's happy, Fran is happy, I'm happy, the barn is happy. No, really, I mean that for real. You know, it's like when you have a dream for something and like the space and the energy in that space rises up to meet you, it feels good. So we're gonna move on because my next guest, you know, I love this woman so much. And talking about spaces, she has created not only a name for herself, but spaces for herself with her name on it. She is born, bred, and buttered in Harlem. She's the queen of American comfort food, the queen of soul, one of my besties. And you're going to find out how we became such good friends and hosts on Beat Bobby Flay. I mean, hosts. We were judges. Maybe we're going to be hosts. See, I'm already calling into existence because I'm calling into existence right now. My bestie, the one and only Melba of Harlem. Hey, Melba.
Hey, my brother from another mother. Hey, Booba.
Why does it got to be another mother? Could be the same mother.
Okay, same mama, different daddies. How about that?
Different daddies. I love you so much. Welcome to my table, Melba.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've been waiting and waiting, and I'm so honored to be asked to sit at the table with you.
You know, my friend, my show Max and Friends, like 17 years in the making, we transitioned out of. I'm going to talk about it because that's, you know, people are like, we're still in the new phase of Welcome to My Table with Max Tucci. But, you know, my guests are really people that in the last couple of years of being the prodigal son and coming back to the restaurant and, you know, being what my ancestors dreamt of, you know, I wanted to bring people that I love, that I'm on the same frequency with, that someone that I could call on at, like, you know, you're like the 3 a.m. in the morning girl. Because you're up at 3 a.m.
I am.
11 o'clock p.m. you're sleeping. 3 a.m. Yes. you're up and you're ready to go. You start your day. But, you know, I said, I have to have Melba on. You know, and so you know how much I appreciate you. I love you. I honor you. I respect you. You're one of the fiercest in the industry because unlike so many, is that Oreo back there? Causing a scene already. A little cameo.
Definitely a cameo. She'll be waiting for her Oreo check, too. You know she's waiting for her check.
Yep, she's waiting for that check.
I tell you, said it's in the mail.
Yep, it's in the mail. I'll send some chicken parm from Tucci. Some meatballs, too. But, you know, what's really fascinating about you is that you indirectly grew up in the industry and then directly grew up in the industry, then worked in the industry. But, you know, Genesis is one of my favorite books. You know, one of my favorite passages because it's the beginning, right? Yes. And the beginning was the word. So I want to know, in the beginning of your life, what was the word that propelled you into becoming, we're going to get there, the Queen of Harlem? But what was it? Tell me your backstory. You know, we know each other, but I want to get in depth with you. Like, I want to know you. By the time I'm done with this, what I want to know is what people want to know. So let's go back to little Melba growing up from South Carolina, your family, correct?
Correct.
And tell me about yams, pies, and cobblers.
Oh, my God. Well, first of all, I'm so honored to sit at the table or sit across the table from you. I love and adore you. And we share so many things in common. But also, you know, two people couldn't have been more different but more alike than we are. Mm-hmm. The power of manifestation and the power of belief and the power of food and community. So for me, growing up, as you said, I am born, bred, and buttered right here in the village of Harlem, which is where I still reside. So growing up in Harlem back in those days, you know, it was the Apollo Theater, of course. You know, it was the Renaissance Ballroom, Small's Paradise. Mm-hmm. And I sneak out with my older cousins, go to 126th Street, backstage at the Apollo, and wait to see what celebrities, what stars were coming through those doors. Mm. And that's where I got my love of entertaining and celebrityism.
Let's paint that picture. Let's take it one step further. Like, bring me to one of those nights, right? For those that never experienced what that was, because it was revolutionary for New York. You know, I mean, what Harlem has done for New York is it has given it such a backbone and such a stability, right? But bring me to that night, like, here we are. It's a cold, crisp evening, right? We're standing by that back door. paint the picture. Bring me there.
Okay. So my cousins, of course, are there with me because they're a lot older than me. We're talking about the early 70s. They're a lot older than me. And we're at the back door with bated breath waiting. You know, I got my pom-pom hat on.
Here we go.
Oh, no nails done, no hair done back then. You know, okay. I got the two braids in the back, and here we are, standing there shivering in the cold, waiting to see. And then all of a sudden, out walks the godfather of soul. Okay, I feel good. And the only thing that you can do is hear girls screaming in the background, guys trying to touch the hem of his garment. Yes, right. That garment. And then there's I, big-eyed, looking like a brown version of Popeye from, I mean, olive oil from Popeye, you know, but feeling the same excitement because I knew that those moments were special. Those moments were Harlem. Those moments where the music of birth of bebop took place. You know, where we would go down and hear Miles Davis, Charlie Parker, coming out of Minton's Playhouse.
I love
it. So that's the Harlem that I grew up in. But it was also the Harlem where food was at the epicenter of everything that was important that happened in our lives.
Absolutely. So,
as some of my other friends could afford to go to Disney, I couldn't. So my summers were filled with going down to South Carolina. With my grandparents, and you know,
what were your grandparents' names? There's that beautiful African proverb that says, "Every time you say my name, my spirit and my energy is alive, keeps it alive." What are their names?
True. I think you're African. So,
I was born by the river.
By the river.
The East River.
yeah, that's a totally different river.
Harlem adjacent.
That's one of the
92nd and Park.
I love that about you. Totally love that about you. But where were we?
Their names of your grandparents.
Oh, so my grandparents, Amelia Davis and Leroy Davis, born in a very, very small town called Hemingway, South Carolina, where my grandfather had a general store and a gas station. My grandmother was the mother of 9 kids.
Wow.
And so she was a stay-at-home mother. And her job was to take care of the household, make sure the house was clean, the kids were fed, you know, dinner was cooked, and everybody did their homework, et cetera. And it was a job. It truly was a job because there were 3 square meals for 9 kids, a husband, and herself, and also whatever neighbors came by. So food was, cooking was the job of the queen. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was definitely the queen. Food was bragging rights. It was sort of like winning an Oscar or an Emmy. You know, when you showed up, your tater salad, and I did not leave the po off by mistake, your tater salad better be good. It better have some paprika on top, some boiled eggs up in there, and some mustard to give it some color.
And no raisins.
I didn't say that, Tucci. You did, but definitely no raisins. And you had to, of course, have some sweet relish.
Yep.
So every dish, every meal, whether it was candied yams, that creamy mac and cheese where the cheese string goes up to heaven and comes back down, had to be right. And that was our way of showing love.
Well, because every meal tells a story. Every dish tells a story, right? And also, not only does it tell a story, but it tells a story in that moment, right? Oh. Like, what is the weather? What is the temperature? What's available, right? And what is it that my heart desires to make you to nourish not only your stomach, but your soul, right?
True.
And so for me, you know, when we could say yams, pies, and cobblers all day long, you know, but really they all have a meaning.
They do.
You know, and that's what I love about food from ancestors. Every dish, no matter if you're African-American, whether you're Italian, Korean, no matter what you are, your ancestors all have dishes that tell stories, right? So what are some of the stories from your table growing up that you were thinking, you know what? I love food so much and I love, because you're a natural hostess, right? Like you have this divinity in you to host. So where is it that you learned that?
Oh my God, definitely from my grandmother and my mother, for sure. My mother was a stay-at-home mom as well. So for us, you know, there was always enough. Like, you know, if people go, oh, don't give out. Oh, no. Bring the Tupperware because there's always enough. There are certain things, Max, that we didn't have a lot of, but we always had enough food because food was our love. It was our way of nurturing people to show how much we cared. So, you know, my grandmother used to say, girl, you go up north, they're going to offer you something to drink, but they would never offer you no food. And down south, it's just the opposite. Everyone is allowed to sit at the table and to partake. But one of the things that I loved, I never got to meet my great grandmother, Mambo. Mambo had a fifth grade education, but she was a product of a slave owner and a slave. So she was very, very fair skinned. And her father had left her over 600 acres of land. You know, and that land is still in our family. And Mambo was strict. She was very, very strict because she saw what her mother went through. So, although I never got a chance to meet her, I felt as if I knew her because I'd heard so many stories that were passed down from generation to generation from my aunts and uncles, who were her grandkids, from my grandmother, who that was her mother. So all of this stuff happened over the dinner table. And you know, a lot of people do deals on the golf course. We do deals at the dinner table.
Us too. You know, what's fascinating with what you said is that, you know, I never met my grandfather Oscar. And a lot of people think I did. I'm named after him, never met him. He died in 1969 on his birthday, okay, June 4th. And 10 years later, I was born. But by writing The Delmonico Way and interviewing people about him, from Tony, you know, Tony May and Sierra Michioni and Lelo Arpaia, I felt like I knew my grandfather more than ever writing this book. You know, and it's like, I can only imagine when you're sitting at that table and you haven't met that person, but yet their energy and their spirit is at that table right next to you because you're sharing their stories, right? And that's why I love storytelling because it keeps them alive, you know?
It
And
does.
look, right now we went back into four generations of your family and calling them
Totally.
into the now, you know?
Totally.
And it gives me chills because it's so beautiful that you know their names. You know, how many of us don't know our ancestors' names, right?
And call on them.
And call on them. You know, I
Totally.
do it every
Oh, you
morning,
do it all the time. I
every
know
morning.
that.
You know, and in the community and in heritage and whatnot, you know, we have that favorite word, auntie. I mean, you are auntie to probably 1.7 million people. That's just in the neighborhood, not including the millions and millions of people that watch you on today's show, on your Food Network. You are auntie to millions. But there's an aunt that you have that really you learned how, I believe, to dig your feet into this industry called hospitality, and that's Sylvia's. So tell us about Auntie Sylvia and how your connection and how you started.
Well, Auntie Sylvia played a huge role in my life in the food and beverage industry. Totally. I mean, growing up with someone who opened her place in 1962, okay, where she started out as a waitress. It was 12 seats. It was called Johnson's. And when she went in to interview, and she went in because she, like a lot of other people that migrated from the South to the North, in search of better jobs and also in search of a way to feed their families back in the Carolinas, back in the South. She walked up to the restaurant, went in, and Mr. Johnson asked her to get him a cup of coffee. Well, Aunt Sylvia could not figure out how to work the urn, but she stood there for 20 minutes trying to get that coffee out of that urn.
Determined.
But determined. And what he said to her was, I like that you didn't give up. Offered her a job, and when he was ready to sell the space, she was the first person that he reached out to. Her mom took a mortgage, a loan out on the land that she had in Hemingway, South Carolina, and that's how she brought Sylvia's. And so now it's 63 years
That's
later.
how she birthed Sylvia's. But
Yeah,
listen,
birth
paint the
Sylvia.
picture of Harlem's food scene in the 60s. You know, because here's the thing. Today, you know, and I say this all the time, you know, we are so dependent and so reliant on technology that the stories of the past are going to be forgotten when everything crashes. Let's just call the thing a thing. You know what I'm saying? And that's why the book for me, The Demonic Way, was so important, because I wanted people 100 years from now to have, you know, a book where they could read about the history. So these kids today who are running around with their TikTok, this and that and the other, they're not understanding the sacrifice that was made for them to be able to go to these restaurants in Harlem, to stand there and to do their TikTok lives out of. So paint the picture of Harlem 1960s restaurant scene.
Wow. Well, as I've read, you know, 60s a little bit.
Right, right, right. No, history. We're historians. You and I are historians. We are historians.
You had James Baldwin. Mm-hmm. You had Zora Neale Hurston.
Yeah.
You had bebop music. You had Small's Paradise. You had the Apollo Theater. Mm-hmm. You had Minton's Playhouse. Harlem was going through a renaissance at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud. Mm-hmm. You had the Black Panthers fighting for the rights. You had the civil rights mm-hmm. movement going on mm-hmm. back then. And Harlem was at the epicenter of mm-hmm. it all, because mm-hmm. it was and still is the mecca of black culture. Mm-hmm. So this is where human rights, civil rights, race riots, you mm-hmm. know, this is where it all merged together. It's where you could find Malcolm X, but mm-hmm. you can also find Dr. Martin Luther King. Mm-hmm. This is where you had Adam Clayton Powell, Mr. Rangel, Charlie Rangel, mm-hmm. all fighting together with a lot of Jewish people mm-hmm. and a lot of Italian people for the rights right. for us all.
Yeah. You know? So the food, what were people like? So let's say that there was a big, you know, a big movement happening. Mm-hmm. Where would you go and eat after?
Oh, everybody used to go to Sylvia's, of course.
Yeah.
Sylvia's was the place to be. And still today, it continues to be the place to be. You know, it's where Jesse Jackson, if he was having a meeting, it would be mm-hmm. at Sylvia's. You know, yeah. Reverend Butts from Abbott.
Why was Sylvia's so important? And Sylvia's why is it still so important?
Sylvia's is important because it's relatable. Mm-hmm. So many of us have dreams. And mm-hmm. Sylvia dared to dream, jumped out, took a leap of faith on herself, bet on her, and she won. And what that tells us is that if she can do it, mm-hmm. well, what it told me, if she can do it, I can do it too.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's that saying, it's so important. There's a saying, when we dream, we got to dream bigger, right?
Totally.
Do you think Sylvia had a bigger dream for you, that she saw something in you where it was like, you know what? Like my grandfather saw in Ciro and Tony May. He's like, they're going to be stars. His dream for them was so huge. And I just have a feeling that Sylvia looked at you and was like, you know what? That Melba's going to be a big star. I feel that.
I think she knew that I had a future in the food and beverage industry, which is mm-hmm. the reason she asked me to come and work with her.
Yeah.
And then also, there was no job too big or too small that I would say mm-hmm. that I wouldn't do. If it was bussing tables, if it was cooking in the kitchen, if it was waitressing, if it was hostessing, if it was, you know, one day I went up to her and I said, Tanti, we need to have an office. And she goes, mm-hmm. okay. She owned the whole block except for the church on the corner. She said, take one of the apartments upstairs and start one. And so I did. Mm-hmm. And that was our first office.
Wow.
Sales were slow on Sundays at one point. And I said, why don't we start a gospel brunch? And she goes, I don't want to pay for that. And I said, well, what if I show you? Oh, my aunt was very, very smart. I said, what if I show you that it would work? She said, I'll give you a month. I got a choir and gospel singers to come in, mm-hmm. sing for a meal, and then promise them if we were able to generate income and generate people coming through the doors, that mm-hmm. they would have a job. And that's exactly what happened. Here you had the first gospel brunch. So much so mm-hmm. to Michael LaMonaco, then called me years later and asked me to do it at Windows on the World.
Yeah. I mean, and then let's also not forget there was Rosa Mexicano. you have done the work, girl.
Oh my God. Josefina Howard, one of my sheroes. I met Mrs. Howard. I was at Drew Nearparent's birthday party mm-hmm. at Tribeca Grill. And Josefina, Drew introduced me to Mrs. Howard. We totally hit it off. And she said, why don't you come and work for me? And I said, oh, because I'm opening my own restaurant with Drew and Bob. And she goes, is it open yet? And I said, no. She said, well, until it is, I'm telling you to come and work for me. I said, yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. And next thing I knew, I was right there at Rosa Mexicano and worked at Rosa Mexicano until 1999.
Until 1999.
Until 1999.
What were you responsible for there? You had a lot of responsibilities. You had a lot of responsibilities. Tell us about that.
I started out being a hostess, went to being a maitre d', and then went on to manage the space. And
so how did you stay so humble?
You never forget where you came from. I'm always hungry, Max. I'm always hungry. Yeah. And the same people you meet on the way up are the people that you meet on the way down.
Mm-hmm. You know my version of that. The asses you kiss on the way up are the asses you kick on the way up are the ones you kiss on the way down.
Oh, yeah. You've said that quite a few times. And there before the grace of God go I. Yeah. And I've been there, you know?
No, you've done the work. And so when did you have that clear vision of, you know what? Now is my time.
Well, I wish I could take the credit for it, but I can't. I was approached by Drew Nearparent after meeting him at Gracie Mansion, where I was representing my Aunt Sylvia's. They were doing a big event. I think it could have been either for Robert De Niro or Al Pacino, someone. And every top restaurant in the city were invited to bring a dish. Wow. So my aunt said, Melba, I want you to go represent me, and we're going to donate fried chicken and collard greens. So Tucci, I'm there. I'm the only brown girl in the room. I'm 20-something years old. I'm the youngest person in the room. And there's this guy sitting across me who reminded me of Pavarotti. And I kept going, why is Pavarotti here for this restaurant event? Lo and behold, it wasn't Pavarotti. It was Drew Nearparent, owner of Tribeca Grill, Montrachet, started Nobu. So he said to me, what are you bringing? And got to me and I said, collard greens and black eyed peas. No, collard greens and fried chicken. So he said to me, why don't you bring sweet potato pie? So I like sassed him because I'm from Harlem and I'm a black girl. And I said, why don't you bring sweet potato pie? Everybody around me laughed. And I'm like, why are you laughing? Lord Jesus, I find out it is Drew Nearparent. Oh my God. Like the numero uno restaurateur in Nueva York. And I'm like, what the heck did I just do? Fast forward. 8 weeks later, the event comes up. I get a tap on the shoulder. It's the Pavarotti guy again, Drew Nearparent. He hands me a dozen of sweet potato mousse tarts. Now, I had never had no sweet potato mousse tarts. Now, I had baked yams. I had yams upside down. I had yams on every way, but never souffle. Tucci. I grabbed one, I bit into it, and it was like I had been transported to heaven, okay? That sweet potato mousse tart was in freaking sane. So I said to him, oh my God, this is so good. It makes you want to smack your mama. He goes, what?
Let me tell you, people are smacking right now. Suzanne's smacking her lips just hearing about that tart.
It makes you want to smack your mama. And he goes, smack your mama? Why would you smack? I said, oh, no, boo, boo. Smack your mama doesn't literally mean go and smack your mama.
And then he opened Nobu.
Right. I said, and I opened Nobu. I said, smack your mama, AKA means you. It's so good that it gets you so delirious to the point that you want to do something that you would never, ever do.
Yeah.
So I think he got it.
He got inspired.
Right. Reached out to me, came to an event that I had for my aunt. It was one of the anniversaries, 30th, 35th anniversary of Sylvia's, was blown away. And he said, how many people were on the committee? I said, what committee? He said, this is a 3-day event. How many people did it take to plan this? Committee? My aunt said, girl, this is what I need done, get it done. It's a committee of one. He goes, no way. There's a black tie event with 900 people. I'm like, my aunt don't play that. Homie don't play that. Mm-hmm. And he said, wow. And he said, have you ever thought of opening your own restaurant? And I said, no. He said, well, you should. Let's talk. And a couple of weeks later, it was me, him, and Robert De Niro sitting at a restaurant having a conversation about it.
You know, there's a quote. I'm going to read it. And it says, this is one of your quotes. And it says, the greatest challenge wasn't just building a business. It was carving out space for myself without a roadmap. In a community where examples of success that looked like me were few and far between.
Yep.
Expand.
It's true.
Expand on that.
It's true. First of all, once I decided that this is what I was going to do, I was discouraged every which way but up. Mm-hmm. I was told I couldn't, I wouldn't, and I shouldn't.
By who?
Why? Everybody. I'm going to tell mm-hmm. you why. I couldn't because I'm Black. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't because I'm a female. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't because I'm from the ghetto. I said, you know what? Two out of three, I'll take it. Definitely Black. Definitely female. But I'm from the Mecca of Black culture, mm-hmm. not the ghetto. Mm-hmm. But I said, when people already count you out, I had no place to go but up because I was already counted out. But one of the best things I did, Max, was I took a chance on me.
Yeah.
I don't ever want to live with regrets. I think as long as you try to do something, then you can never fail. The failure is when you don't try.
Yeah. You know, but also, I mean, I want to, like, just the fact, you know, you are born of strong women.
Yeah.
You are born of strong women. So your destiny was already written. Mm. And I think that moment that you were born and your feet walked, those little Melba feet, baby feet, walked on those streets of Harlem, you already knew that you had a purpose.
Yeah.
Because you went up against people that in society would have looked at you and said, why? Like, who does she think she is?
Yeah.
But you already had the grace of strong women arriving before you in these moments.
I agree with you.
Who saw you were like, you know what? There's something about her. Mm-hmm. You know, we can go into that whole Maya Angelou. The reason why there's something about her is because your ancestors already showed up before you did.
Right? And paved the way. Right?
And paved the way.
And paved the price.
And paved the price and paved the way. And you've done the same. You've paid the price. You've paved the way. You're an inspiration to so many, you know, in that committee of one. You know, at the end of the day, you lay down and there's just still you, you know, employees come and go, teams come and go, but your vision remains so accurate for the community and for your community. So tell us what happened when you're older, you're walking through the streets of Harlem, you're walking by, you know, the Apollo, and now you're walking by a space where you're like, this is going to be Melba's. How did you find that space?
I think the space found me.
Mm-hmm.
Like you say, the ancestors speak to you.
Yeah.
I think the space found me. Wow, this is such a great story. I was on a flight and the flight attendant said, in case of an emergency, put on your mask first.
Mm-hmm.
And Max, it's something that I'd heard so many times before, but on this particular day, it resonated with me. I'm like, Melba, you're complaining about the drug deals that's happening, the this, the that. But what are you doing about it?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing about it? So my mom, my grandmother, my great-grandmother, they all saved money under their mattresses. And so every Friday when I got paid, I'd put a little something under the mattress. Sometimes it was $5. Sometimes it was $10. Sometimes it was $1. But I would just put a little something under the mattress as a rainy day fund. And on this day, when the flight attendant said that to me, my son was about 4 at the time, my baby. I was married, unhappily. And I said, what am I doing to change my community? Well, I started counting. I said, let me see how much money I have saved. It took me over 2 weeks to count. I had amassed a small fortune, $312,000.
Wow.
Which was like hitting the lottery.
Yeah.
I was shocked, had no clue.
And that's money you made from your hard work.
That's money I made and saved.
That's the difference. That's the difference.
And saved, right. Yeah. Right. So this, the last day that I counted the last bit of the money, I walked by 114th Street mm-hmm. and Frederick Douglass, AKA 8th Avenue. To the left, there was a storefront and a sign said, for rent, call. The same block, there is a school, Wadley School, in the middle mm-hmm. of the block. 114th Street in Frederick Douglass used to be one of the most notorious drug blocks in Harlem. But just picture this. Before kids got to go to the middle of the block to attend school, they had to witness people using drugs, selling drugs, dealing drugs, cracked out, shooting up in the arm, and then they had to go to school and learn. That would always break my heart.
Yeah.
And I said, Melba, you're complaining about it, but what are you doing about it? Wrote that number down, called Limley and Wolf, who were the landlords at the time, spoke to Robert Reach, and he said to me, well, do you have experience? I said, yeah, I've worked in her. Anyway, he goes, but we have a lease out. And I said, Mr. Reach, with all due respect, has the lease been signed? And he said, no, but the gentleman is looking at it. I said, well, my grandmother always said, a deal is not a deal until the I's are what? Dotted?
Mm-hmm.
And the T's,
and the T's
are, what?
Are crossed.
I already know. See, we got the same grandma. We already know that. And so he said, you know, I like you. And he said, can you come in tomorrow? I said, Mr. Reach, I'm totally booked for tomorrow. I said, but I can come in today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Hopped on that train, went up to the Upper Bronx, 170-something street, and that's how Malbus was born. But for me, it was about having people from my community see that you can come from the Harlems of the world, and you have options. You can own your own business. You can employ people from the community, which is what I did. But for me, it was just showing people that there are options.
Now, who at that moment in time was alive in your family from your women ancestors?
Oh, my mother was alive. My grandmother, my favorite aunt Donna. Don't tell the rest of the aunt.
Aunt Donna. So when you approach this destiny, let's call it, right? And you told them, I signed a lease. What was their reaction?
You know, it's interesting. My mother was a little skeptical. My mom loved her to death, but my mother was always the kind of person, go get a government job, which I did. Go work for the post office, which I did. And for my mom, it was all about security. So she was very frightened for me. She really, really was. And she really doubted that it would work. She did. But I also understand where that came from.
Patterns and pathologies. Exactly. And you're disrupting them.
Totally. That came from her being the youngest of a bunch of kids, where things had been passed down like 7-8 times before they got to her. So I understood the reasoning behind that. But also having had women in my life from the time I was 9, like the great Ophelia DeVore, who at 16 started her own modeling school and started her own agency, who was from the South as well. And when she walked, she took classes at Barbizon School of Modeling. And it wasn't until a brown-skinned girl walked in and they said, I'm sorry, we don't teach blacks, that she found out that they didn't know that she was like your complexion, but she black, you know? And so she decided to start her own school. But it's having women like that in my life that encouraged me, or my grandmother, which is why I reference her a lot, because my grandmother was the driving force behind my grandfather. You know, my grandfather had the idea to start the store, but it was my grandmother's money.
No, it takes a woman to get things done. Let's just call it.
It was also her financial forces that made it happen. But she also supported him in everything he did, even though she was a stay-at-home mom.
Absolutely.
You know, she was there with the black and white composition book, figuring out the layaways, you know, doing the bookkeeping and stuff like that. So,
yeah. You know, this scene reminds me of that scene in Sister Act where, you know, they're at the school and they're trying to clean up the whole neighborhood. So now you're doing that. Like, literally, you're out there cleaning up the neighborhood and you're bringing in what, I mean, this whole, we've been talking about food, we're at the table, right? And you're bringing in food and you're bringing in nourishment to a block that never had the nourishment of a mother, of you. Right? You became the mother of Harlem. We can call you the queen, but you're the mother of Harlem because you looked out for the children. You looked out for the community. You wanted to feed them, and you still do that today with God's love. You know, you have this capability and this ability to be the mother for so many. So when you're cleaning up that neighborhood and now you've got your name on the building and your door opens for the first time, how was it received?
Wow. So I don't advertise. Going on 21 years later, it's word of mouth. I show up for my community, but my community shows up for me. Mm-hmm. You know, Harlem made me. It birthed me. It got me through the rough times. It saw me on my knees and pulled me back up, mm-hmm. as it often does. This is not an easy road, as you and I both know.
okay? Look what my mug says.
I can roll that.
Be still and know.
No, I love that. I love that. And so true. Mm-hmm. This is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. Mm-hmm. Literally. And so when people talk to me about getting in the food and beverage industry, I think it's our responsibility to be honest with them, yeah. not to just share the good things. It's sort of like
Instagram. Can't candy coat it. We cannot.
Right. It's sort of like Instagram. Everybody shares the good stuff. There's no bad stuff that happens in your life. Come on. Mm-hmm. I think it's so important to give a truthful vision of our reality. So whenever I do have an opportunity to speak, I not only tell people about the great things, granted, mm-hmm. there are some amazing things, but mm-hmm. there are also some really, really tough things.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think it behooves us not to paint a rosy picture like it's always shining, because it's not always shining. There are so many doors, Tucci, mm-hmm. where I walk, it's so many times where I walk out of those front doors of Melba's and mm-hmm. I go, what the heck were you thinking? What mm-hmm. were you thinking? But then I look to my right and there is an amazing monument on 110th Street of the one and only Frederick Douglass standing tall with his head held high and mm-hmm. in his stride. And then I look to my left and from the hems of our garment are the roots and the faces of so many that we've lost and that we're left behind. Mm-hmm. And like the old spiritual hymn, I go, I won't complain.
Mm-mm. Yeah. No. You know, and that's what a bed is for, right? That's when you just hit that bed and you're like, there's too many good things that are happening yep. for me to complain, that I'm just going to sleep it off and get up and know that by the grace of God, I got another day.
Oh my God. Right? So that's another thing that we share in common. when we're overwhelmed, we both hit the bed. Yeah.
Hit the bed.
Yeah.
No, because it's the rest. It's the rest that we need, you know, and it goes back to that be still and know when we're in that moment of just of the decompression of a day that's been exhausting, you know, and also people think like, you know, when you're meeting, I mean, you meet thousands. I mean, we meet a lot of people a day.
Right.
You know, and that is absorbing energy.
Energy. You know? I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
And when we absorb that energy, there's nothing like a good shower and a good, nice bed. Clean bed and just shake it off. You know, they say that really before bedtime, you should just shower yourself to rinse all of it off, you know,
yeah.
to rinse those challenges off. But, you know, there, even though there's challenges in opening up a restaurant, there's so many joys, you know, and your smile is a reflection of the joy. And, you know, when I come to Melba's, everybody is the joy they have to go to Melba's. And now not only the joy to go to Melba's in Harlem, but let's talk about this empire, Miss Melba, Grand Central, Central Park, Newark, with your Devil's jersey on. Don't think I don't see. Don't think I don't know. And you know what I love, too, is that when I want Melba's, you know, and I don't even tell you half the time, because I know when I tell you, you're like, give Max a chicken. No. We're going to support. So I roll up there. I take the subway from my house, 3 blocks away. Yep. Go right to Grand Central.
You've never told me this.
Yeah. And I get food. And then sometimes when I take the train in from the farm, I stop by and, you know, I try to pull my hat a little lower because they all know me by now. And let me tell you, when you put that fried chicken sandwich on the menu at Grand Central, that grab and go.
Yeah. I had that last night.
I want to have that right now. So how does it feel, you know, I mean, you saying your great-grandmother was the byproduct of a slave.
Totally.
To now you owning a restaurant empire. We're literally like Cheers. Everybody knows your name. Yeah. What does that do to your soul? And what do you tell your great-grandmother in that moment?
Wow. What I say is thank you never seems like it's enough. Mm-hmm. So that's the fuel that feeds the fire in me, is because I know that there's so many people, Max, that laid down their lives so that we can vote. I mean, just think, in the 70s, women couldn't have credit cards. I think it was 74 or 72 that we could first go to a bank and have our name on a credit card, you know?
And that's not that long ago.
Not that long ago at all. Mm-mm. And so when you think about the price that was paid, that we will never know the enormity of it all, I can't give up. I won't give up. I can't stop and I won't stop. But I'm proud. I'm proud to know that I come from a people that are rooted in faith and resiliency. And so when I look at the world and I look at the different ups and downs, the hurdles and the hurdles, and I say, you know what? This too shall pass. You know, and we have to believe that. We can't just say it. We have to believe it. You know, my grandmother, I have a lot of isms. Because I am. And my grandmother is my girl. And she used to always say, Melby. I don't know why she called me Melby, but I never questioned it. That's why I got my teeth still. She used to go, Melby, faith and worry cannot live in the same house. And so, do I get concerned? Of course. But there's a part of me in the back of my mind, in the soul of my heart, that knows it's going to all work out. Because guess what? It always does. Joy cometh when? In the morning.
Yeah. And I want to take that even one step further, because I think in your life, because you had women praying for you, and you still do.
Yes.
It's not about it will happen. It's already done.
Where the church fan at? Where the church fan at?
And it's not about joy cometh in the morning. It's about joy is right now. Right?
In whose time? In God's time.
Yeah. And the now moment for you is so beautiful. Look, you know, what I love about you too is that I knew you were going to whoop his ass, because if Bobby Flay beat you in frying chicken, then there's a problem. Because no white boy should ever beat Melba in frying chicken.
Come on now. Come on
present,
now.
Look, present yourself. Present
and
yourself.
And if you don't know, now you know.
So, you know, that, I mean, I just love that moment for you, because
thank
it didn't
you.
Define you in any way. And what it did was it just showed, like, no. Like, you better lay low.
Yeah. And that was throwdown. So, like, that was throwdown. Play, you know you're going up against him.
Right.
Throwdown, they psyched me out. Like, they did. And they said, I just had to do a demo of my chicken and waffles.
Right.
So, we did one at the restaurant. And then they said, choose a second place. I chose the Lenox Lounge, of course. And I'm doing my demo, just about to start. And in comes Ginger, the redhead, the blonde, whatever color Bobby's hair was at that time. And I said, oh my God, how nice. Chef Bobby Flay, I and Chef Bobby Flay came in to watch me do my dish, demo my dish. And I was so honored. And then they bring out a table, and everything starts coming out of nowhere. And he goes, are you ready for a throwdown? I'm like, a what? Breaking 1-9. Anybody get the memo? A throwdown with Iron Chef Bobby Flay totally changed my life.
Yeah.
But you know what my grandmother used to say, baby, always be ready so you don't have to get ready. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
I shall not be moved.
Come on now. And we sat, and I was nervous, and I had a little powder on my forehead from the flower, you know. And I was like, what the heck's going on? Because you don't know.
You don't know.
And it's a blind taste test. So people, you don't know. And nobody knows who has won, because they judged it right there in front of you.
Yeah.
It's dish A and dish B.
B. Yep.
And next thing you know, breaker 1-9.
Breaker 1-9 broke. Because everybody
was
on
such
it.
A proud moment for me.
Yeah, of course.
Because for so long, we were told that our food was garbage food, and it wasn't good, and it didn't deserve equal footing. And so for me, that was a moment of knowing what I do is enough. But it was also a moment of being seen, being heard, and being felt.
Yeah.
And it's not just a moment for me. It's a moment for we. Everyone that have dreams. Everyone that was told that they couldn't, they shouldn't, and they wouldn't. This was not just for me. This was for all of us that live in that same space.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. I love this. You know how much I love this. Okay. So, I mean, there, look, and we got to have fun doing that judging too together when there was nothing better than Isaac seeing us on Instagram.
They were not ready for the two of us.
At Shoot Cat. You know what? They're ready. They're ready. I'm not
Isaac wasn't ready that day.
He wasn't ready.
Rockstrom
Studios wasn't ready that day. Brooklyn wasn't ready that day.
Joking the whole day.
Brooklyn wasn't ready that day.
No.
But, you know, that was a moment where, you know, when I meet so many people in my life, that moment solidified, you know what? Melba and I are going to be doing something big together. We are. And I just trust and believe and know that, you know, if I could see it in my mind, it's already created in my reality. I just got to align with it, right? So that alignment is happening right now. But you know what? Speaking of right now, the illusion of time is also happening.
No.
So I know, but you know what time that is? It's we got a game. We got
a game.
We got a game.
You have a game?
Yep. It's called the three Fs. If you don't know, now you know.
Okay.
The three Fs, all right?
I didn't know about this game.
Yep, I know you don't know, because that's how we roll. What do you want to forget in 2026?
I want to forget 2025.
Who do you want to feed?
I would love to feed Michelle and Barack Obama.
Mmm. And who do you want to frolic with?
Oh, I got to keep it clean. You know who I would like to frolic with?
Mm-hmm.
Hugh Jackman.
Wow, the greatest showman. Wolverine.
Mm-hmm. I met him at a charity event, mm-hmm. and he was wonderful. And this was mm-hmm. many, many years ago. And I just never forgot about him. He's...
Mm-hmm.
And because he was...
Has he been to Melba's?
No, he hasn't.
Okay, Suzanne, can you please call Hugh Jackman so we can arrange him to go to dinner at Melba's?
Sure can.
Yep, sure can. You're going to make it happen, right, Suzanne?
Okay. Yep.
We're
going to
make
do
it
this.
Happen. Yep. Oh, that's going to be a fun dinner.
It's going to be
especially
fun.
Now that we know that you want to frolic with him.
The chicken's really going to be fried that day.
You know what they say, Hugh Jackman? Once you go black, you never go back. And the blacker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
You know what? I ain't messing with you. I am not messing with you. But you know. Hugh Jackman is
mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. You better frolic away.
Don't get no trouble now.
Nope. You know. What we just need to do, you know, what we do for things to go viral. I love you so much. And, you know, there's that song, The Goodness of God. From
Thank
the
you.
Moment that I wake up until I lay my head, yes. I have known and I have seen the goodness
the
of
goodness
God.
Of God. Amen.
And what I want to say is I have seen the goodness of you.
Oh, thank you.
And I love you. And we're going to wrap this up. And you know what? Who do you want to welcome to your table next time?
Well, Mama G, because that's my girl. When I grow up, I want to be like Mama G.
For those that don't know, if you don't know by now, Mama G's my mother.
and she rocks a caftan. Okay?
And a caftan. And if she's full, she'll take her wig off.
If you want to know where Max Tucci got it from, oh my God. He
look
it
at
from
his mama.
Mom, as we say in the hood.
The best dinner was when she just took the wig off at the table and she said, "I'm so done." And Melba looked at me.
I didn't even know it was a wig.
Nope, that's
I mean,
how
it was
good
a
Mama
good
G.
Wig,
no the clue. Lace front. That's a good Mama G
oh,
lace
God.
Front.
Oh God.
And she just took it off.
Just took it off. Put it right at my dinner table. Right
isn't that the truth? You know, I love that our ancestors conspired to bring us together. That I know for sure. So, you know, welcome to my table with Max Tucci. This is what we do here. And you know what I love about welcoming people to the table is you never know the conversation you're going to have. So welcome someone new to your table this week. I love you for tuning in. Melba, where can we find you?
You can find me at Melba's in Harlem, Melba's in Grand Central, Melba's at the Prudential Center, or Melba's at Central Park, Woman Rink.
There you go. All right. I love you. I gotta go now because they're telling me it's time to wrap. But you and me must never part,
Love you, Tucci.
You know, I'm gonna bring Desrita Jackson, who played the young Miss Seeley in The Color Purple. You know, she's got a podcast now. She's a dear friend of mine. When she comes to New York, we are all coming to Melba's. Until then, I love you all for tuning in. Peace. I gotta go. I'm Max.
From Delmonico Farm in New York, here's Max Tucci. Welcome to his table.